The United States Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit is now open and in session. God save the United States and this honorable court.
Good morning. Before we get started today, I have the great pleasure of submitting for admission to the Court of Federal, the Federal Circuit, one of my law clerks, and I will need to pass the gavel to the next ranking member of the panel, Judge Dyke.
Judge Garza, we'll hear your motion now.
I move the admission. You can stand up, Aaron. I move the admission of Aaron Fountain, who is a member in good standing of the highest court of the state of Texas. Although his membership is in the state of Texas, it's harder still in California. I have knowledge of his credentials and satisfied that he possesses the necessary qualifications and move his admission to the bar of this court.
Hearing no objection, the motion is granted. Welcome to the bar.
Please raise your right hand. You swear or affirm that you will comport yourself as an attorney and counsel of this court, uprightly and according to law, and that you will support the Constitution of the United States of America.
I do.
Congratulations and welcome to the bar of the United States Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit.
Congratulations, Aaron.
Thank you.
The first case this morning is case number 2006-7322, Pope versus DVA. The appellant has waived argument. The government has not. And Mr. Hokey, are you ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor.
You feeling better or worse? Or is it going to be worse after 15 minutes?
No, I'm... May I please the court? I did spend last week nursing my son back to health, and I seem to have picked up what he had, but I think I can last 15 minutes.
Good. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for allowing us to argue. We likely would have waived as well, but in this case, Mr. Pope raised an issue for the first time in his reply brief involving the Veterans Court's decision in Vasquez-Flores, and so we felt it was coming upon us to address the court today about that reply brief.
It strikes me, he says that the case wasn't decided until after his opening brief was filed, but that's not true, is it?
No, that's one of the reasons why we wanted to address the court. The decision in Vasquez-Flores was issued on January 30th of 2008. The motion, or the order he refers to in his reply brief April 3rd, order denying a motion by the Department of Veterans Affairs to stay the precedential effect of Vasquez-Flores was issued. And it's that document that Mr. Pope refers to in his reply brief. But because his principal brief in this case was filed on April 9th, it was well after the date decision in Vasquez-Flores was issued on January 30th. So we think that under the rules of this court and Smith-Kline and Cross Medical Products and others, that he's waived the argument by not preserving it in his principal brief.
How would Vasquez-Flores apply to this case? I'm not sure that I understand.
I'm glad you asked that question, Your Honor. It wouldn't, as the court is aware. In this case, which is one of those cases that was pending before the Board of Veterans Appeals at the time that the Veterans Claims Assistance Act was passed in 2000, didn't have, obviously, a what we call the pre-initial decision notice, because the first RO decision in this case occurred in the 1990s, well before the VCA was passed. But there was a notice issued in June 2001, following a request, actually, by Mr. Pope, which is found at A65 of the appendix attached to the appellant's brief, to provide VCA notice. And moreover, the decision below, the Veterans Court's decision on review before this court, deals with the prejudicial error issue, not the notice issue.
What's his theory as to what he was entitled to notice of? He had service connection for residuals of a scar. Is he saying that he didn't receive notice of the things that were necessary to increase that rating? And I thought, in fact, the rating couldn't be increased for the residuals.
Right. That's another problem in that the merits, the residual scar has the highest rating. His argument, I would go to the...
That's really an issue on the residuals. Merits, though. That's really an issue on the merits as
right.
far as the
but,
scar is concerned.
Right. The scar has already been rated at the highest level a scar can be rated. So he wouldn't be entitled to any increased benefits as a result of notice about other ways to increase your rating. The residuals of the hernia is, he argued for 20%, I think it's rated at 10% now, he argued for 20%. But so none of this is relevant.
What is he saying? That he should have received notice of what was necessary to prove
the 20%
residuals of the hernia?
Right.
All right.
But none of this is relevant because the court below assumed, because there was no pre-initial adjudication notice, that the notice was defective. So all Vasquez-Flores does is add another basis upon which the court could find insufficient notice. So we already have, in other words, Vasquez-Flores doesn't add anything to this case. The Veterans Court's already held that there was insufficient notice. What the Veterans Court did in this case was further find that that insufficient notice didn't prejudice Mr. Pope. And so Vasquez-Flores doesn't have anything to do with prejudicial error. It has to do with types of notice as provided on an increased rating claim.
Counsel, should we just hold this case until the Supreme Court does whatever it's going to do with Sanders?
I don't think that's necessary, Your Honor, because in this court's decisions in Newhouse and Leachek, this court instructed the Veterans Court that in order to determine prejudicial error, it has to look at the whole record, which is what the Veterans Court did in this case. And this court further said in Newhouse that a finding of lack of prejudice by the court is not something this court reviews.
But it just seems to me that the opinion is tainted by the inaccurate representation of the standard or the burden of proof vis-a-vis prejudice. And so while I certainly see the language you're pointing me to suggesting that they made what you would consider to be an independent finding of prejudice regard or lack of prejudice regardless of the burden, it's kind of hard for me to reconcile that with the page before it, which clearly mm-hmm. sets out the burden. If it were sort of two discrete sections, or if the opinion was clearer and said, regardless of who had the burden, I would still find. You know, but it doesn't have any of that. And so I think given the ambiguity in the opinion itself, we either vacate and remand for the Veterans Court to make clear its finding, or we hold till Sanders, and if the Supreme Court should choose not to follow the precedent that we had established, then this case would be an affirmance, I imagine.
Well,
the Supreme Court reversed us in Sanders.
I think there are actually three possible responses. I do believe that I think this court's decision in Newhouse answers the question in this case, in that even though there is this reference to the burden placed upon Mr. Pope, what the court did in this case was, in using the term moreover in the opinion, sort of finding an alternate ground that even though he didn't, in the mind of the Veterans Court, establish prejudice, the court went ahead and looked at the entire record anyway. And so we would find that the reference to the burden would be simply harmless error because the Veterans Court's already made a finding that he couldn't have been prejudiced in this case for all the reasons that the Veterans Court did, and those reasons aren't reviewable by this court. So it would seem to be the old exercise in jurisdictional ping-pong thing.
But you're assuming that I can distinguish those as two distinct holdings. And if there is, I mean, really, you know, we're talking about veterans here, and if this opinion is sufficiently ambiguous that I don't share the confidence that you do, mm-hmm. that the court made a separate holding of lack of prejudice despite the burden allocation problem, then what do I do?
Well, if the court holds that it finds there was an improper burden placed on this case and that the other part of the decision doesn't cure it, holding the decision past the Supreme Court's December argument and whatever they do in Simmons and Sanders is one possibility. Another possibility in this case is remand for application of this court's Mayfield decision. As the court is aware when reading the decision below, the Veterans Court issued this decision before what we call Mayfield 4, which is the Mayfield decision found at 499 F3rd, in which it dealt with the situation of a notice that was issued subsequent to the initial adjudication of the case, but that had a another RO adjudication subsequent to that, which cured the notice error. In this case, the court found that the June 2001 notice was untimely. And that was the argument, actually, Mr. Pope raised before the Veterans Court, was not necessarily with the content, but with the timeliness of the notice.
The court did consider Mayfield.
The first
that sentence, the moreover, the court cannot find in the first instance that notice was Section 5013 compliant, see Mayfield.
Right, but that's the Veterans Court's, or that's your that's this court's first Mayfield.
That's the first Mayfield.
Right, and so in Mayfield 4, which is this court's second Mayfield decision, is when this court held clearly that a issuance of a VCA notice subsequent to the initial adjudication of the case, but which is followed by a re-adjudication of the case, and in that case it was in the form of a statement of the case or a supplemental statement of the case, can cure the timing defect. And that's not that's not done in this case.
Wouldn't it be better judicial use of time to allow the case to wait until Saunders is decided by the Supreme Court?
Well, I mean, certainly that would
get back and forth to the Court of Veterans Appeals.
That would answer all the questions. I mean, I think we think that under an application of Mayfield 4, the notice issue could be cured. We think that under an application of this court's decision in Newhouse, any error in misstating the standard of review or the burden of proof was cured. Alternatively, though, should this court hold that you can't separate those two sentences and that we think there was an error, holding it until the Supreme Court finally rules on the notice and the prejudicial error question of Simmons and Sanders is a third alternative.
Aren't there other cases like this where the same thing has happened, where the Veterans Court stated the wrong standard for prejudicial error and then went on to find as a matter of fact that the veteran had notice?
Yes, I think there were. I'm not sure how many are left before this court, but at the time this court issued its Simmons and Sanders decisions, we reviewed the record, and as this court's aware, there were a lot of Simmons cases that the government appealed, but there were quite a few Sanders cases as well. And our position was that in those cases in which the Veterans Court ruling simply found a lack of prejudice solely based upon the failure of the appellant to establish prejudice, we joined in those cases with the appellants for remand for further review pursuant to this court's decisions in Simmons and Sanders. But in those cases where we felt that the Veterans Court actually went, despite any erroneous language, went ahead and reviewed the entire record like this court instructed the Veterans Court to do in Newhouse and Leachek, and at that point concluded that there could be no question that the person received notice in this case, we don't think those cases merit further remands. And we think this is one of those cases. I mean,
do we know how many of those cases there are where you concluded that because they made a finding of actual notice that a remand wasn't required?
There weren't that many, Your Honor, and I can say that I'm not sure how many of them got to the full panel because anecdotally I can say there were a dozen or so of those cases which were represented by various attorneys, but who concluded for their own reasons that there was no merit to their continuing to seek the remand request. So what happened in those cases is the pro se appellants then proceeded before this court on an informal basis. And in some of those cases, they didn't proceed at all, and this court dismissed those cases for failure to prosecute, and some others were handled informally by both parties. The number's not significant, but anecdotally I can say that that's what my recollection is from all that. This might be these cases sort of went through the system several months ago, so this, I suspect, is one of the last of these kinds of cases in which there may have been a Sanders error, but the court went ahead and looked at the entire record per Newhouse and reached this conclusion of no prejudice.
Mm-hmm. Was that after Sanders was decided?
Most of those other cases were, but this case is not one of those. This case obviously was issued before Simmons and Sanders, so this is one of those situations where the court was thinking ahead and this particular judge looked at the entire record. So, but we do think that the record here is pretty clear. not only for all the reasons mentioned in the court's decision below with respect to how this person received notice, but by virtue of the fact that counsel who represented Mr. Pope below, before the Veterans Court and before the regional office, even sends a letter on Appendix 65 after the VCA was issued saying, we are expecting our VCA notice. So there can be no question in this case that Mr. Pope and his representative knew what the VCA called him, what the VCA required, and in fact requested that information be formally sent to him. Are there no further questions?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Case is submitted.